This is an ABC podcast.
I remember the first time I sat down to use OpenAI's ChatGPT. I logged onto the chatbot's website and was presented with a blinking cursor and that now familiar prompt, send a message. I had the knowledge of the internet at my fingertips. I could ask it anything, and its powerful brain would sort through all that knowledge and give me an answer in a lovely, digestible form. So what did I type? Write a short rhyming poem from my dog to me. And then I added please, as I didn't want to sound rude.
Dear James, with you I long to part to that wondrous open park. Birds to chase and grass to tread, thoughts of sausages fill my head. So please, dear friend, with a loving heart, let's go and let my adventures start.
I think for an AI, that's pretty good. I showed it to my dog, but I think she prefers the more avant-garde stuff. This is Hello AI Overlords, a science fiction series about how artificial intelligence has burst into our lives in just a few short years. I'm James Pertul. At the start of the year, it was ChatGPT and its amazing ability to communicate that was the thing that broke AI into the mainstream. But like everything in AI, it didn't come from nothing. Its rise has given one company, OpenAI, and one man, its CEO, Sam Altman, a huge amount of power and a lot of say over where AI is heading. It's created an arms race as the world's massive tech companies scramble to control the most important technology in the world. This episode, what happens if one man controls the future of intelligent machines? If modern AI and ChatGPT in particular had a face, it's this guy.
Sam Altman.
What was Sam Altman's pitch to you?
Sam Altman, everybody!
Hi, lovely to meet you.
Sam Altman is the CEO of OpenAI, the creator of ChatGPT, arguably the world's most advanced AI tool. And depressingly, Sam is young. He's 6 months younger than me, and I'm 39.
The whole world wants this technology. The whole world needs the benefits of this. For me personally, the thing I'm most excited about is using this technology to increase the rate of scientific progress.
Like other tech CEOs before him, Sam Altman's rise to power has followed a similar pattern. He built a cool app, dropped out of Stanford, by 30 was leading Y Combinator, one of the world's best startup investment companies. And for a brief period, 8 days to be exact, he was the CEO of Reddit. And by the way, he's a prepper. He said he has guns, gold, antibiotics, and gas masks stored on a rural property somewhere, just in case. But at the moment, he's optimistic about the future.
I am a huge believer that the only sustainable way that our lives all get better is scientific and technological progress.
And as young tech CEOs do, Altman made a lot of nice-sounding statements about his mission and how he's going to change the world for good.
We started this company because we thought AI could destroy the whole world and we wanted to figure out how to prevent that.
For those that know him, like Rewan Child, who used to work at OpenAI, Sam Altman is a straight shooter.
He'd often have kind of ask me anythings, like we'd have CEO ask me anythings. He would ask him hard questions. He'd always answer them directly, usually pretty succinctly. And when he didn't know stuff, he would just say, I'm not sure. I still do feel a lot of admiration and respect for him. I think he's a very plain-spoken, but really, focused on the important elements kind of guy.
But the interesting thing about Sam Altman is he has this crazy ambitious dream. He wants to create an artificial super intelligence, a machine smarter than any human. But you can't just conjure that up from nothing. You need to take a series of steps and make a bunch of technological advances to get there. And that's where ChatGPT comes into it. Because up until 2017, computers were terrible at reading and writing. Sure, they could be taught to recognize certain words, but they struggled with sentences and paragraphs. In the computing world, reading and writing is known as natural language processing. It's an incredibly complex trick. And computers were getting straight fails.
It was just garbage, you know, like every time somebody tried to do anything with computers and natural language, it was an embarrassment.
Jeremy Howard is a world-leading machine learning expert. And yep, that's an Australian accent.
Garbage.
And in 2017, Jeremy was living in Tech Central, San Francisco, and he believed teaching AI to read and write was the next big step.
The vast body of knowledge of what humans have written down and the huge ability to communicate with humans through text, it was outside of the purview of computers. It was the biggest thing holding back, in my opinion, kind of computers from being, as useful a tool as they might be.
Jeremy had an idea. So he downloaded all of Wikipedia. That's 3 billion words.
This idea that if you train a big enough language model for a long enough time on enough general text, you know, Wikipedia covers a lot of different territory, you end up with something with a huge amount of kind of latent capabilities.
Jeremy hoped that his AI could do more than just be an encyclopedia. It would hopefully understand the relationship between words. So if you fed it the sentence, "the day after Wednesday is," it would know the answer was not potato or the Battle of Waterloo, but Thursday. And if it understood enough of these relationships, maybe that would add up to intelligence. So Jeremy used his fancy new AI to work out if a movie was hot or not.
So I actually picked the hardest and most well-studied task, which is to read an entire multi-thousand word movie review and say whether it's a positive or a negative sentiment.
The experiment worked. The model was better at working out if a reviewer liked a movie than any AI ever.
For sure, I had goosebumps. It was definitely beating the best ever result. And so I just set to work trying to figure out, is this real? Because if it is real, this is the thing I've been wondering about for 30 years.
Jeremy had figured out a way to teach AI to read, and he clicked publish on his research. What happened next shocked him. OpenAI picked up the idea and ran with it. This is what it'd been looking for, a way to teach AI to read and write. A few months later, OpenAI released its own large language model, and it said it was partly based on Jeremy's ideas. It was an early version of the now world-famous ChatGPT. It was basic, but it worked. AI could now digest human knowledge in written form. Sam Altman had taken another step towards his goal of superintelligence. But the success would put him on a collision course with his own principles, and he'd have to make a big decision. Because Altman didn't want to just develop superintelligent AI. He wanted to do this safely. Now, Altman knew the history of Silicon Valley. Small company invents technology, dominates the market, and becomes a tech giant. Think Google with search or Apple with smartphones. And Silicon Valley historian Margaret O'Mara says Altman had an idea about how to avoid this happening to AI.
You know, he is very much committed to open source stuff. He's an open source guy. That's his philosophy.
And Altman was so dedicated to this principle, it's there in the company's name, OpenAI. The open means open source, sharing the source code of software so it can't be controlled by one company. But there's a problem with this. Money.
They have money. They've already acquired the top research. Many of the top researchers on this in the world work for one of these companies. Now they're all racing against one another.
If you're a growing AI company, you're going to need people. And you can't match the salaries of the big players without a lot of money. So Altman was in a bind. And he knew from his time growing startups at Y Combinator, you've got to think big. Because you also need money for computers. Training AI ain't done in your laptop.
Like, basically, imagine a huge warehouse, like maybe 10,000 square foot warehouse, which is just filled with racks of machines.
Rewan Child actually went inside the data centers that trained OpenAI's early GPT models.
Each of which costs $20,000 or $40,000. Or when you start running your model, just the sound of all of the fans turning on is like, you know, a jet turbine or something.
Altman had reached the crossroads. Taking the money would allow investment, growth, and speed. Not taking the money would mean giving up on his dream of super intelligent AI. And so in 2019, he announces his decision. He's taking the money. OpenAI signs a $1 billion deal with Microsoft, and its technology will no longer be shared freely with the world. Some employees even quit in protest at OpenAI becoming too commercial, and they start their own AI company, Anthropic. But with Microsoft's money, Altman can pursue his ambition, and his company begins training an enormous AI model, much, much larger than anything that's been seen before.
Personal money terms, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, oh, that you'd spend like millions of dollars, which is more money than most people see in their lifetime, on a language model where it's like you're not even sure if it'll be useful for anything.
So Sam Altman has to compromise on one of his big ideals. He believes he has to do so to invent the technology for a better future. But a better future for who?
Yes, it was a dream job.
This is Richard Muthengi, and these days he's the head of the African Content Moderators Union, and he's been listed among the top people in AI. But back in 2021, he was just starting a new job with an outfit called Summer. This was a company OpenAI had contracted. Summer is based in Richard's hometown of Nairobi, Kenya. Richard's job, and that of dozens of other workers, was to sift through the output of ChatGPT as it was being developed. Because a model that's trained from all the text from the internet ends up spitting out a lot of terrible stuff. So humans had to tell AI what was acceptable and what was not.
We had two factions. One was dealing with violent content, and the other one, which was myself and my team, we were actually working on sexual content. We were training the chatbot how to work with toxic pieces of text that were very disturbing, very grotesque, very traumatizing.
For 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, he and his team worked in a secluded room. Often the material they had to read was ChatGPT's written depictions of child sex abuse and bestiality. So ChatGPT would churn out content and Richard would tick a box saying if it was acceptable or not. But as the months wore on, the flow of disturbing content didn't slow down and the team grew more and more traumatized.
And some of them, by the way, as we speak right now, it was so harsh to the point that they even separated or they even divorced with their partners just because of the experience that they went through in terms of, you know, content moderation.
And the kicker, they got paid peanuts.
It was less than a dollar an hour.
Less than a dollar.
Less than a dollar an hour.
Now, OpenAI says the story is more complicated. It believed Summer was paying its contractors more than $1 an hour. Summer says it didn't do anything wrong and that it offered workers living wages. Either way, Richard says he and his team haven't had an apology from OpenAI and they've set up a union to help African content moderators negotiate with big tech.
You don't just work with someone and throw them away, you know, just because you have maximized the profits.
OpenAI was now worth billions, and it was no longer non-profit nor very committed to open source. Instead, it was allied to Microsoft. Sam Altman had done what it took to chase his dream. He may have had to compromise on his open source ideals and take billions in funding, but he was about to change the world. ChatGPT was unleashed, and everyone lost their mind. This is Rewind Child, who worked at OpenAI.
I think the public reaction is something I had completely gobsmacked by, like I had no ability to predict.
ChatGPT was the fastest selling consumer app ever. It made OpenAI and Sam Altman famous. It wasn't super intelligent, but it was freakishly good. It could pass uni exams, and it looked like it could replace a lot of workers. People woke up to the potential of AI. People like leaders of countries, politicians, And they were nervous about this new power that Sam Altman wielded. What future was he creating? Somehow, Sam Altman had found himself as the spokesperson for modern AI, and he was happy to use his unofficial status. In May 2023, he hopped on a plane for a 22-country, 25-city world tour. It's basically a very nerdy Kon-Tiki tour. Instead of getting drunk and passing out beneath a historical statue, he addressed the United States Congress.
My name is Sam Altman. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of OpenAI.
He met France's President Emmanuel Macron.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about large neural networks. It's really an honor to be here.
Then Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak.
We think it can be a printing press moment. We have to work together to make it so.
Then India's PM Narendra Modi.
We believe that the benefits of the tools we have deployed so far vastly outweigh the risks, but ensuring their safety is vital to our work.
Margaret O'Mara says Altman presented himself to world leaders as the inevitable new tech superpower.
Sam Altman on a world tour as if he were a leader of a nation state, a head of state, is kind of, in a way, underscoring that, even if that wasn't the intent.
It wasn't just a simple PR trip. Altman's message was more complicated than the arguments of previous tech CEOs talking to governments. He said AI was great, but it could be dangerous, and it needed to be regulated.
We think that regulatory intervention by governments will be critical to mitigate the risks of increasingly powerful models.
Altman was like an evangelist, preaching the coming of a higher power.
We are working to build tools that one day can help us make new discoveries and address some of humanity's biggest challenges, like climate change and curing cancer.
He said superintelligent AI was right around the corner, and it was going to be everywhere in our lives, like a really clever Google Assistant. Though when I gave the current generation of AI a go, it would seem this future is not here yet. Hey Google, are you there?
Of course I am. I'm always here for you whenever you need me.
I'm trapped in the bathroom. I need your help to get me out.
Sorry, I didn't understand that. Just tell me if you need help with anything or if this is a good time to have fun.
I need help getting out of the bathroom. It's an emergency.
Bummer, I still don't understand.
Okay.
But I'll be here if you need me.
I'm actually quite hungry and I need help. I've been in here for some time now, Google. Is there anything you can do? Hey Google? Anyone? Hello? But Altman says superintelligence is coming, and it's not all good news.
My worst fears are that we, the field, the technology, the industry, cause significant harm to the world.
For example, AI could be used to hack elections through creating videos of politicians doing things they didn't actually do, or using their voice to frame them for scandals. Whatever the inventive use, whoever has this power will steamroll those who don't.
It is essential that powerful AI is developed with democratic values in mind.
Now, Altman prides himself on being unlike the other tech CEOs. He's a cool CEO. And now, after years of hard work, he's the guy who's found himself as the voice for AI. The multimillionaire from Y Combinator, who's behind disruptive companies like Airbnb, is the guy government seems to be listening to. They ask him, what should be the rules around this technology? And the future that he sketches out is kind of what you'd expect from a guy out of Silicon Valley. It's a future where a bunch of CEOs make a lot of money. Altman says OpenAI and other tech companies should continue to own and operate the most powerful AI models. And yeah, they should be regulated, but not too much.
Well, at the end of the day, these are all private sector companies, and their purpose is to make money. It's capitalism.
So when you scrape away the hype and Altman's warnings, his vision of the future is a familiar one. It's the same Silicon Valley dream we've heard for years from Google, Facebook, and others. Technology will make the world better. It will solve everything. And yeah, it will be very profitable.
The Sam Altmans and others in this whole debate, they are very, very privileged. They are, by and large, extremely wealthy, and great wealth can create a bubble. even if you have every desire to stay in touch with, you know, the pulse of the world and what people are thinking, great power and wealth is very isolating.
You think he's being a little naive?
I fear so. Yes, I do. I do. I wish it were otherwise. I wish it were otherwise.
Altman's world tour feels a bit like a global victory lap for his vision of AI. And his message is that he's the good guy. He wants to share AI with the world, not lock it up. But others grow worried that actually he's tightening his control.
OpenAI is now believed to be valued at $100 billion. It's gone up 3x in a few months. I don't see why it won't go up another 3x in another few months.
That's Jeremy Howard, the Australian who developed the language model that helped OpenAI make ChatGPT.
You know, these AI companies, I suspect, are on track to being the most powerful organizations in the world and will continue to grow.
But what's stopping others from making their own powerful AI? Well, Jeremy says there's a couple reasons. First, there's a big cost barrier. It costs over $1 billion to train a cutting-edge AI, and that cost is going up. And then there's a data barrier. GPT-3 was trained on the entire internet. GPT-4 was trained on the internet plus data created by GPT-3. GPT-5 will be trained on data from GPT-4. And so we're at the point now where you need an existing very large language model to train a new one.
This positive feedback loop will be so great, which, you know, that would mean that company becomes the biggest monopolist in history.
So Jeremy says only a few companies will have the resources to build the best AI. And that means whoever is in front now or in the next few years will dominate AI for at least the next few decades.
They'll make the kind of British East India Company seem like peanuts. You know, they'll be vastly, vastly powerful. And so, yeah, what happens to the rest of us in that situation? Well, we don't really have much to add, do we? You know, we then become, most of the world then becomes actors with little ability to generate surplus economic value. Given that already right now, the humans in the world who we feel that cannot generate huge amounts of surplus economic value, we treat like absolute crap. You should assume that when most of us are like that, we'll be treated exactly the way that we treat those people now.
Now, we don't know how the future will work out, but it looks like the early idealistic phase of AI research has passed. We're now entering a new era of profit. We've seen this before. Google's first motto way back in 2000 was "Don't be evil." It quietly got rid of this 5 years ago. And this is why we're talking about Sam Altman and the scramble for control. There's two sides to Altman. One, a techno-optimist, excited about future technology. And the other side, well, he's just another Silicon Valley CEO.
I know how power works. You know, I've seen it enough times that once people start making bucket loads of money, they get surrounded by people who want them to keep making bucket loads of money so that they can also make bucket loads of money, and they all convince themselves, oh, you know, the more important thing for us is to make bucket loads of money.
Is it a case of, you know, power corrupts?
You know, I think it drags in the wrong kinds of people. I think you can convince yourself very easily that you being in control of vast power and resources is actually a net good to the world. You know, I think they've convinced themselves of that, and I think that's very unlikely to be true.
This is Hello AI Overlords, a science fiction series. I'm James Pertil. Our show is made on the lands of the Whadjuk Noongar, Wurundjeri and Palawa, with production by Jordan Fennell, Erica Voles and Will Ockenden. Our sound engineer was Marcus Hobbs. Next episode, we've talked about the history of AI and the companies that control it. Now it's time to talk impacts.
I was brought on as a background actor in a very large superhero movie.
And hear from people whose lives were disrupted by the sudden arrival of this powerful new technology.
There was weird vibes. There were a lot of people from the studio there one of the PAs was coming through and kind of like hand selecting people from a list.
Actors who went on strike saying studios wanted to digitally clone them and do them out of acting work.
They said, you know, we got this really cool opportunity and we're going to just scan you. It's a full body scan. It's like, you know, video games. It's cool. It's like, it's the thing that we do. This is just like a new way of doing it.
That's the story of 2023, the year the world woke up to AI. You can find our previous episodes right now on ABC Listen. Search for Science Friction. Don't forget to tell a friend about the show. See you soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.